was given a fair platform last episode to really talk about what matters. So we're here today. I finally caught up with season two of Twin Peaks, and we're here
this again, huh?
We're here to talk about Fire Walk With Me.
Oh, Mike, it's a joke. Guys, Max, it's okay. He made a joke. It was a funny.
We're talking about Fire Walk. Right?
With me. Yeah.
Right? Sure. I got the memo, right? That's the correct.
Max, this is a really good joke.
Yeah, I'm really...
Have you noticed how good this joke is?
I'm legitimately confused. I thought we were talking about Fire Walk With Me, the David Lynch movie that came out. The prequel to Twin Peaks, am I wrong?
Like, I just have to...
We're talking about Overwatch Fire Edition.
I just have to keep yes-anding him, right?
I think we just yes-and until we die.
What are we here to talk about, then?
Guys, thank you for joining our improv GM session. We're talking about Firewatch today.
Firewatch!
Yeah.
Oh God, David, I'm sorry, David, guys.
Did you just
the realest yeah, bud. Yeah, bud.
Yeah.
So supportive.
The realest yeah, bud is the one from a place of sadness. Anyway, we're talking about Firewatch today.
We are talking about.
Thank you. I feel compelled to like thank people for tuning in. I don't know why. I just.
It's,
man, getting into the game is always a bit bumpy for your old pal David.
I'm really glad that you've switched from like. Thanks to thanks from like for tuning in from like thanks for bearing with us.
I mean that we haven't gotten to the ending yet, so we'll see what happens.
So thanks for bearing with us, guys.
If you put all the episodes together, they end with me apologizing for being here, and then but the next one starts with thanking you for giving us another go inexplicably.
Much like my Twin Peaks jokes, there is continuity between episodes.
At least you're earnest.
That's just TV.
At least
that's
you're
just
earnest.
TV, Caleb. It's not unique to Twin Peaks. Oh God. Okay, so we're talking about Firewatch. It is this is relatively recent release, mm-hmm. which is exciting. It was 2015.
No,
2016.
Came out last year.
Snap.
Yeah. February.
Guys, do you want to just get into that sweet grit? Which I mean, like, quickly gloss over the plot, because that's super hella important to this game.
Plot's hella important.
Well, who developed
the plot isn't as important as the premise.
Do you want to go over some details?
It was developed by Campo Santo, and this normally isn't as important to bring up, but one of the art directors, if not the head art director, was Ali Moss, mm-hmm. which is something we will be circling back to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We will.
Max said... The plot is not as important as the premise, and what this premise is you are playing this character. You know, I'm going to get to the plot in a sec, but you are a like fire lookout in this national park. So you're in a beautiful forest, mm-hmm. and you're sort of trying to solve a mystery that is going on. And the only thing that you, other than interacting with the environment, you have a radio to contact your supervisor, Delilah. So you're constantly letting her know what's going on, bantering with her about what you see. And just sort of developing this relationship with her while trying to figure out the crazy stuff going down. I can breeze over the plot real quick.
Yeah, I mean, you can summarize it in probably two sentences.
Because we're going to talk about it, and like some of the things we bring up will just be really weird to bring out of left field.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. So go for it.
All right, so yeah, there's a short opening segment, which is just sort of like you get text and then you choose a prompt just to like develop your character.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that the character you play as Henry, his wife, had early onset dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really difficult. And he goes to become a fire lookout at the Shoshone? Rosh Hashanah? He becomes a fire lookout at a park. Like I mentioned, his supervisor is Delilah, and that's the person you're talking to. And the first thing you do is, like, stop these teens from shooting fireworks and skinny dipping in the lake. And the next day, like, I'm skipping over a lot, but over a series of days, you're just sort of doing menial tasks. You find a book bag that Delilah tells you belonged to someone named Brian Goodwin,
mm-hmm.
who was this, like, sort of stowaway son of Ned, who was a fire lookout. And you're not supposed to bring kids, but he brought Brian... Brian was a cool kid that Delilah liked. Things get really weird. These teens go missing. You find a clipboard that has all of your and Delilah's conversations written out. when you find that you're knocked unconscious, you find like a government research facility with even more of your conversations written out. When you leave it, it is burnt down, like a fire starts and it just destroyed. You find like this little like walkie-talkie with an edited conversation between you and Delilah framing you for it. So it just becomes this like really intense, like crazy mystery. Like it starts off again, starts off with you like just being a ranger, and then you're like being surveilled. At one point you end up in a cave and you find the body of Brian Goodwin, the kid, which that is the big thing that we can't just bring out of left field. Wait. That is why we're explaining this plot, because you can't just go, and that kid
died. By the way.
By the way. And then that's sort of like the ending of the game. You find the sort of...
Well, there's also, there's the raging fire that you have the option of naming, and that's sort of like in the periphery of all of this revelation. So like, that's kind of what propels you guys into the ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, throughout this entire game, there has been like fire that has been growing. So by the time you get to the end, you have to evac because it's just not safe for you to be there anymore.
Because
yeah.
Fire.
So as you're leaving, you find a cassette. You find a cassette from Ned saying, "Yeah, I kind of lost it when Brian died, and I just sort of lived in the woods. I'm gonna live in the woods still. Don't come looking for me." You find out that those teen girls were just like.
Fine.
Not like captured or anything. They're fine. They just went off the grid for a little bit. And then you just sort of have a conversation with Delilah about what happens now, and she's just basically like, go home to your wife and roll credits.
Roll credits.
That wasn't too bad. See?
No, yeah.
That was good. That was a good it's cool. Summation.
Thank you. Oh, thanks,
you did
guys.
A good job with that.
I'll take my trophy. Okay. Okay.
That was not my hand.
You just slap. Yeah, you can't see, but Caleb's just slapping his thighs together. All right, so we did it, right? That's the episode. We can go to bed now.
Not quite. Go to bed now, whiner.
what are we missing?
The crit, the substance.
Oh. Well, I just did a lot of talking, so one of you pick up a thread.
So what do you want to tailor? I mean, you had mentioned it's not really about the plot, right? It's not about the plot. Mm-hmm. It's more the experience. Do you want to talk about the nature of what you're doing in Firewatch? And
I mean, I could talk about it. So I think one of the...
Guys, we can talk about literally whatever we want.
Yeah, we can. So yeah, let's stop
talking... Except Twin Peaks.
Except let's stop talking about what we're going to talk about and just talk about it. So in Firewatch... Yeah, so there's this plot and there's this mystery unfolding, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Although in truth, and this is kind of one of the things which I'm in retrospect finding kind of interesting, there is no mystery. It's very like you are making the mystery. Your character is making the mystery himself, kind of. So it's as much about the mystery of the what is occurring at the camp as it is about this kind of character study on paranoia. And isolation, and paranoia as created via isolation.
I think it's an excellent exercise in paranoia. You're not given a lot to... I mean, it reminds me a lot of what a true, quote-unquote, horror experience can be. You're sort of... Your only real interactions with people, the teen girls, Ned creeping on you when he's on a cliff... kind of flashing his flashlight at you, they're barely rendered polygonal shadows. That's essentially what these things are, but it's just enough to be an invasive sort of presence, and it lingers with you in the conversations that you're having with Delilah, sort of color that paranoia even further. So you get these moments where, like, you feel like you're being watched, and that's sort of a testament to, like, you're not really interacting with anybody face-to-face, but it just feels like the environment is sort of caving in around you a little bit. It becomes less of a... There's a point where I feel like it's less of I'm exploring this space and sort of orienting myself with the map and the environment, and it becomes more of someone's kind of out to, like, get me or... Mm-hmm. kind of peek into my life, and I don't feel as safe. And then it's punctuated even further with, oh shit, this fire is actually consuming this environment. I need to leave. So I feel like it's a really good sort of like arc of your own paranoia driving you out of this place of solitude. So like to the developer's credit, I think that's really like effectively conveyed throughout the whole thing.
That's interesting because I as a player didn't feel very paranoid playing Firewatch.
Really? Interesting.
I didn't feel like I personally didn't feel paranoid, but what I thought was interesting is that I felt like Henry, my protagonist, was paranoid. It was one of those things of like, well, I don't feel concerned, but I feel like my character is getting very concerned.
Okay.
That's a weird barrier, but
it is,
sure.
No. There is a difference, I think, from you yourself getting nervous and having a, like, because this is such a character-centric game, having, like, having moments of, like, ooh, my character's not doing so good. Like, I'm pretty, like, it's cool, like, the colors are on point here, like, I don't feel too nervous.
Max just didn't feel anything, David.
I felt a lot of shit at that beginning.
Tell us about your feelings.
Tell us about the beginning.
That intro segment...
Where you pick your skill set?
Yeah, the very
it's like Up, the text adventure.
Dude, that text adventure was I think that was one of the strongest text adventures I've ever played. Like,
it was good.
Sorry, Fallout, you did it too. But like, here's what this is a praise, but also an issue. That was my favorite part of the whole game, and it was the very, 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 very first thing I did, which is a problem.
Yeah,
totally. But I thought that there was something about the way that opening scene unfolds, where opens up with text as Henry and his wife-to-be in the future meet as college students at a bar, or she's a professor and he's a student. And then cutting to character interaction as you walk towards this job, where as I was playing it, I kept thinking like, oh, I'm a college student. Oh, wait, no, I'm in my 20s. Oh, wait, no, I'm not really in my 20s. I'm a lot older than that. Oh, wait, wow, oh, my life isn't so good. Ooh, things are actually really bad.
Yeah, totally.
Oh. Like, it was one of those, like, I just kept, like, playing. It was like you'd pick text little bits to the life, and then that would be added to my construction of what my character was.
Right.
And then it would cut back to, you know, me walking to my truck, and I'm like, oh, I guess I'm a 35-year-old guy who's got his wife at home, and oh, no,
everything is awful.
Oh, boy. And I thought that was cool. Like, that made me, like, it was kind of like five minutes to get in the shoes of someone's life, and I did it in a good way, and it was all small details.
Well, I think the passage of time is, like, a very interesting process in this game. Like, you have that entire sequence basically establishing Henry's life journey for like 20 plus years, and then there's a so you're going day by day, right? Watch day number one to watch day number three, and then there's a point where it straight up is like days 3 to like 64 or something, and it's like basically a fragment of time. You're accomplishing one small thing, you have a little interaction with Delilah, and then it just totally skips to the next day. And I thought, like, it's really interesting how they're achieving that. And they're able to flesh out the relationship with Henry and Delilah a little bit more by having it span across, you know, an entire summer, essentially. So I like how they're playing with time with this.
And I go back and forth on how necessary that opening sequence was, but something that it does do is that it makes your relationship with Delilah a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, totally.
Because Delilah kind of hits on you very often.
Yeah.
And like in another game, like, you know, that decision's pretty straightforward, but now you have the added layer of, oh, I have a wife at home
who's
also...
I didn't humor her
dealing
at
with
all.
A very serious...
You're like, no.
I was just
please
sad.
Back.
No. I was just a sad old man the whole way through. I was like, no, this is my character, and I am not letting her in on this.
Don't interfere with my digital wife.
And actually, like, yeah, that moment of time makes things. And but also, I was gonna say, like, the same way that having that early passage of time is really important. There's something about the way where, you know, as you're saying, Caleb, like, there's a huge time skip after the intro into where the meat picks up, and that time skip is really important, because that time skip is 60 days of two people sitting in towers by themselves.
Yeah, totally.
And that is an enormous psychological exhaustive period. And I like that, like, it sort of, like, starts off with this little, like, new-to-the-job freak-out kind of moment, basically, which is basically all that the girl, that whole thing with the girls is. And then it just, like, once it hits that, you know, that 60-day period, everyone's paranoia starts, like, it's like this whole grand conspiracy starts getting created. And my immediate thought was, like, hey, you guys should chill the fuck out for a sec.
I don't see why you're being so, like, hard on them being freaked out when they're finding literal transcripts of their conversations.
I know. Like, that's, it's, I just, I like, oh yeah, you're right, they are finding literal transcripts.
Max is such a cool dude,
thing to find, Max.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, never mind. I was like, for a second.
Yeah.
But it's, you know what it is? It's the conspiracy notion of, like, all this stuff has to be connected. That's like...
Well, you also...
You're not going to find transcripts of your conversation and be like, I bet this is fine. There's nothing weird here.
I mean, it is a jarring thing to realize, and I think the way that they're pulling these twists are a lot more organic and natural. They don't feel like MacGuffins to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're basically... You're building this slow tension of something is watching or basically stalking us in our conversations. You arrive to that fence, which, you know, you radio to Delilah. And I think I fully believe that she was lying when she was like, I don't know, it's just there because someone might have gone ass end on a trail. So in your mind, you're thinking like, okay, something is fenced off. Something is beyond this. Not quite sure what it is. And then you return to it later, and they're slowly building this idea that something is watching, and something is around you. So when you finally do go to that site and you see a bunch of, like, Ned throwing some falsified information, how you guys are observational subjects, I mean, it
personality reports on you.
Yeah, that stuff is just so creepy.
But you were saying that, like, that's creepy and not conspiracy paranoid. That is, like, but that scene is there to, like, confirm that their conspiracy paranoia was worth something. Because there is, like, a couple days of them being freaked out over things that aren't real. It's like, that's when things
real. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is the punctuation of, like, oh, shit, something's actually... From the moment he, like, picks up that clipboard, it's like a oh, shit moment. And then he walks forward and gets punched in the head by Ned... Mm-hmm. After finding a radio on the ground, and then it completely pops off from that point forward.
And as an added praise to the writing, I love that once the conspiracy is confirmed, and it's like, oh wait, there is something very much going on here. Mm-hmm. They're kind of broken. Henry and Delilah are like, what the? They're both like, fuck, fuck, fuck. They're almost like, I'd rather be being paranoid. Like, this is fucked.
I think part of the reason this works so well, and, like, you are in the, like, one of the prettiest game environments I have ever seen. Mm-hmm. Like, you're in this gorgeous park. Okay, screw you, Caleb.
It's like a 2016 main Proteus.
It is a solidly beautiful environment. How's that?
I'll accept that.
All right, it is a solidly beautiful environment, and you're just, like, out, like, in the wilderness and doing these, like, simple tasks, like... Oh, I found a turtle in a box. That's cool. Oh, I'm being surveilled. Like, it's this, like, contrast between this, like, huge open environment and this really, like, suffocating experience where you're being watched, even though it seems improbable.
And actually, it's
a really powerful contrast.
The gorgeousness of the environment is why I, as the player, didn't feel paranoid. I'll be honest. That is what it did. Like, I don't have an answer for that because I'm happy. I love how gorgeous it was, but it didn't make me feel concerned. It made me feel very, like, at peace.
I really like that, like, how your body's just like, well, everything's pretty, so it can't be all bad. Like, at least the trees are cool.
I'm an entirely visually, like, directed person. I'm just like, It's pretty. It can't be bad.
Well, I mean, there are moments, though, where the conversations you're having, despite it being very gorgeous, leads you into a feeling of terror. You know, when you're, like, following the beeping device, the beeping device, whatever. The technical
You find term. A tracker.
You find a tracker. It leads you to a backpack with the keys to the cave in it, and you hear from Delilah that someone is in your tower.
Yeah.
And there are those moments where you're like, oh my God, this is completely bizarre and off the cuff. But you're still contained. Like, in that moment, you're like, I am not safe. I do not feel safe anymore.
And another added thing that I like in terms of one of the things that's really nice about this gorgeous environment is there's something to be said about your character sitting and staring at this gorgeous, this really like nice colored sunset kind of environment, and then talking about how his dementia-addled wife will not remember him, and how it's not even really worth going back home to her. Like, his attitude is like, or at least the attitude I was going with him, is like, he's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't know where my life is.
There's an earnestness to the way that they talk about their lives, which, you know, we'll get into whether or not Delilah was fucking lying, bullface lying to you the entire time. But, you know, there's a certain sense of comfort in these two people just sort of bearing their soul to each other. And it's not heavy-handed at all. I mean, they're dealing with incredibly real stuff that is just given a real delicate touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really worth mentioning just how good the writing is in this game. Like, it's really easy to take advantage because, like, the quality of games has improved that, like, you can create a pretty successful character.
Right.
But, like, these two people are super duper real. Like, they're written very well. Their personalities are very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
It is part of the reason I think this game is relatively easy, unless you're Max, to get immersed in.
Oh, no. I was incredibly immersed, but not in the way that you're saying.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about real quick? I mean, as a testament to the art design, I know David wanted to geek out about Ollie Moss for a bit.
I could spend about 20 minutes talking about that.
Right, yeah. We're talking about the design. So let's talk about the design.
So like I mentioned, the art director for this game was Ollie Moss. I don't quite know how he got, like, I don't know if he was just friends with the developers and they're like, we're making a game, or they like reached out to him. But this would be a good time to take a quick Google to look up his work.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you some time.
Oh, listener, do you feel like you're trapped in the 70s? No, you're fine. No, that's just Ollie Moss. Don't do
this. I'm gonna Google search Ollie Moss.
Okay, but we're just Googling on our podcast now. No, but so if you, his work, I don't feel it's necessary to me, like, to get super into its aesthetics.
It's
and
like
what he
aesthetically
does.
It looks like a book cover from the 70s. Very like heavy emphasis on silhouettes
and color and color bodies.
Color bodies, yeah.
What is very noticeable in his work is just his attention to color and light.
Mm-hmm.
And that orange. That very much translates to Firewatch.
Mm-hmm.
He worked a lot with getting the lighting profiles of this game right, and it's real pretty. Sure. I don't know how else to describe it, but like I think a good way that I would kind of sum up his aesthetic is that it's like unnaturally strong. So like these oranges are some of like the richest oranges mixed with this like reds and purples. And then like the early morning, it's this like kind of like sea green with these blues and like these little reds streaking through as well. And it like creates a very stylized environment, but gorgeous and believable at the same time.
One of the things I would say, which separates it from games that have a similar aesthetic to it, is that whereas some games that go for this like bold color would treat every color layer as its own separate, like, okay, this is the area of green, Firewatch approaches it in the this is an orange scene, so there's going to be six different oranges working off of each other to have this really encompassing color feel. And you're talking about different time of days, and it really comes down to like what color is this time of day, because the entire environment is filled with this color.
It also changes depending on where you are in the environment itself. There are areas where you will turn a corner and it's in direct hitting of the sunlight. And there's, like I was telling David earlier, this is one of the few games to evoke that feeling of, man, I need some sunglasses. You're kind of squinting because there's just like this really thick haze that's over the environment. And I think it's pretty impressive that he was able to translate the feeling of his 2D aesthetic into a 3D world, because there are areas that just evoke being outdoors, but it's an oversaturation and richness of kind of what he's doing. So,
there's a sort of added benefit that he also created a lot of some of the art assets for the game, like book covers, the posters, and actually like the logo, so it has, because it's made by the same dude, there's a very unified aesthetic. It all feels like it belongs in this world, and like they wanted to create a mood and they nailed it. Say what you about Ollie Moss, Caleb. They were sort of going for like old 70s retro stuff in this game, and it
worked. No, it
like,
works. Yeah, it absolutely works. Not here to knock Ollie Moss.
I mean, the game.
Please join me for my other podcast, Ollie Talk.
I mean, the game does.
Tuesdays at 5.
The game does take place in 89. It has a definitive time period to it, so.
It's the right choice for this game. Yeah, it absolutely is.
And I mean, in terms of like, they could have gotten another art director, they could have gone with any style, but I feel like his work and his attention to light just helped create this beautiful environment.
Yeah, it's like one of the few examples I can think of an illustrator actually applying their talent and their aesthetic successfully to a different medium. In this case, you know, it makes sense to have somebody like an Ollie Moss on your team. Especially for an independent game, like it's just great that managed to like kind of push through, and you can really tell that he had a huge part in it. So,
Do we want to talk about the ending?
Sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. That is all.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Right. I guess.
So David. Just, so what, like, hap- David just what like, happens?
And I'm done.
So what happens in the game?
Clocking out.
That ending. You have basically a huge revelatory moment, and I say that in terms of it's just something that you've seen kind of coming, but then it's confirmed that Ned was with his son, and he slipped and died? It's kind of...
It was a climbing accident.
That's what it seems like. But apparently Delilah had no idea about that. So you get this cassette, you have the option of seeing Ned's lookout, if you really want to climb up and look at that, which is filled with transcripts that, you know, he had falsified to put in the research lab. You know, they're kind of rough drafts of it, which I thought was a really nice touch. But then it's basically evac time. So Delilah is about to leave, and you tell her, you have the option of saying, no, stay, and... She's
stay in this fire with me.
Stay in this fire. I just want to see your beautiful face. But then you finally get to Delilah's lookout, and she's gone. So you sit down, flip on the radio, tune in, talk to her, kind of air some frustrations with her, and the game just sort of ends. So you go to the helicopter, it takes you away, and that's kind of it. I want to talk about how... much of a missed opportunity this last sequence is.
I think we all do.
Because I think it does a huge disservice to everything that they've been building up until this point. It sort of seems like it's not even a neat sort of like bow on top. It just is a cliffhanger for the sake of, I don't think they knew how to resolve it in a very thoughtful manner. It's just sort of, this is kind of what life would sort of be like. You kind of have a non-ending to some issues. This is how we're going to address it, and it just doesn't feel very well crafted at all. It's just sort of a frustrating ending.
Well, it does leave the door open for Firewatch 2, Ned's Declassified Field Survival Guide.
See, that's a Ned's, good joke. That's a good joke.
Ned's
Caleb.
Survival.
Not Firewalk with me bullshit.
Ned's survival. I can't think of anything. David sort of stole the thunder for me.
Crushed it.
And I actually think that note of like ending on this weird, lacklustery kind of like it's not a video game ending. It is kind of more of a real ending to things, which that is. I don't mind that it doesn't have everything neatly tied up with a bow, but here's my problem is that. The ending kind of is just like, oh, there's a conspiracy, but things aren't as tied together as you've been led to believe. And I wish that that was kind of, I wish that they pushed a bit more the, like, no, you two were psychologically adding a lot to what you thought was going on, and they kind of didn't do that. Like, they kind of, like, they turned it into this culmination, like, there's that turning point where you go, oh, there's the fence, and we have to break in, and it starts becoming this, like, build-up of, oh, there's a conspiracy, there's a mystery. And then it kind of just...
I don't know why you keep hating on them being paranoid. They went to a government facility, it was burned down, and they were going to be framed for it. No. This is real shit.
No, David. I'm agreeing with you, but what I'm disagreeing with is they don't really have a dialogue that addresses that.
Because they don't.
I would have liked maybe some more dialogue towards the end where it's kind of like one of those, like, oh, so that's what it was like. The girls weren't involved in this.
Well,
that was
so,
just us being freaked out.
I think the assumption, or at least what I'm gathering from the clues, is Delilah and Ned were working together in some respect. I fully believe that Delilah didn't know that Brian had died. She seems genuinely quite shook when you tell her.
She seems genuinely concerned about that.
Right, and I think that's sort of a falling out of her and Ned's character, is she had no idea that Brian was dead. Mm. But there are moments when, like, you stumble onto that research facility and she's like, I don't fucking know where this is. But then you look up from the tent and who's... watchtower do you see? It's Delilah's, like, just there in the distance. So she definitely knows that that's there, and there are just little clues throughout the game where you're like, I think they're colluding together. There's a moment when you sit down to talk to Delilah on the radio where, you know, there's a drawing that she had done of you earlier, and it says, the inscription is, what we know on Henry. Like, that's
the royal we.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a weird sort of like, well, what do you mean by it?
I don't see the benefit of Delilah. Like, I don't see what her game could have been if she, like, I just don't see her motive for, like, cooperating with him at all.
To fuck her, I don't know. I can't really give an explanation as to, but there are so many inconsistencies of, like, how do you not know that this thing exists when you've been here for, like, 10 years? But there's also that conversation Delilah has kind of earlier in the game where she leaves your communication line open and she's clearly talking to somebody about you, of what you know and what you don't know. I don't know, just it seems a little bizarre to me that there are these things that she's not really owning up to. Or
she's
inconsistencies,
though. Here's the thing, though. At the end of the day, she is your boss, and you are a low-grade employee.
Right.
You don't need to know everything. Legitimately, your character is not that important in the grand scope of things.
Right.
But that's where I kind of wish, even if it wasn't dialogue with, like, I even would have said, like, fuck it, like, I would like some more, just, like, even if it's Henry talking to himself, like...
Yeah.
That level of, like, oh, wait, like, no, we're not really, like, as much friends as I'm really reading into this whole relationship.
Right, but
like,
there's
more going on here. Like, I've also been by myself for 60 days. Maybe I need to take a breather for a little bit.
I have a different reason for why the ending didn't super stick with me. Wait, Caleb, were you going to follow up on that?
Well, there's also another thing that just doesn't add up to me. She has said on multiple occasions, and it's really assumed that she doesn't really travel that much outside of her watchtower. So there's a moment where, like, she delivers a radio, like a new radio, to a supply cache that is on the other side of the map. She would have gone past Henry's tower. It doesn't, like, that doesn't make sense to me that you would, for someone who doesn't really pike that much, to go across the map to deliver this radio. Like, that. None of that adds up to
it. Listeners, you can't see it right now, but Caleb has left his chair and is pointing at his wall where he has a board that just says Delilah circled.
A bunch of colored yarn that's wrapped around her watchtower in the spot.
Yep.
Who is Pepe Sylvia?
It's just weird.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Just that never really
it
sat
is weird.
Well.
That's actually, I didn't think
me.
About that. That is actually a kind of a good detail. I hadn't thought about that.
Anyway.
I think it could also be the developers didn't want to render any models and have you interact with any character, but
fair.
I'm just
that's
baller.
Fair. That's fair. Okay,
but the reason the ending didn't land with me, well, it was partly that I played this game over probably 4 sessions. That so I broke up into pretty small chunks.
Like, I don't think I could do that.
It was a mistake, but like, so that means that I kind of like, Brian and Ned were sort of non-characters by the end. So like when I got to the end, I'm like, oh, it's these people. That's sort of the whole thing. All right, I guess they were in the game. So I had that disconnect, but more importantly,
I guess they're in the game.
bigger than that is like all of this stuff that we're talking about happens off screen. Mm-hmm. You stumble across Brian's body, you find a cassette of Ned, you get to look at his like, you go into his like murder dungeon or whatever you want to call it, his lookout, and then as you're leaving, Delilah basically over the radio is like, ah, the girls were okay. Mm-hmm. We were just sort of freaked out. So like all of this stuff, like all the resolution happens. I mean, it just like feels so disconnected.
Well, it's you. Also like I don't appreciate how the way that they confirm a lot of your paranoia in a really just like contrived. You get a cassette tape from Ned, like you listen to his Manifest Destiny and sort of his confession of what happened with his son.
I think Manifesto. Manifest Destiny is something very different.
Yeah, that's oh, wanting God. To travel.
Please
that's
edit that.
Wanting to travel. That's wanting
please
to travel
edit,
westward.
Please edit that buying. Out. Please.
No, I'm gonna keep that in.
No, yeah. Please edit that.
So Ned believes he has the divine right.
No, please
no.
Keep it. David, keep it in and remix it.
Okay, I'm gonna turn it
can
into
you
a
auto-tune
dope
it?
Banger.
Can you please auto tune it then?
You know I don't put that much time
okay.
into doing
this. Oh, that's really bad. Okay. Well, anyway.
You get his manifesto on a cassette, and it's just sort of like...
I don't
like,
know if I can do this here's... anymore, guys.
So, Max, we can just carry the
okay,
load.
Now,
in Caleb's defense, there is kind of a thing you could kind of make a case that it is a Manifest Destiny mentality, too, but...
Oh, my God.
He's just digging
too
this
deep
hole
into
for
this
me.
Gaff.
Anywho,
but
where were we?
I think it's a very clunky way of confirming what they've been... suspensefully building for the entire game mm-hmm. to have one tape basically be the confessional of this deranged father it's just clunky. It's really clunky. And
it's kind of you don't find it. The fire catches up and everybody has to leave and he just kind of gives up and is like, look, you're not gonna find me, just leave me alone, here you go, you're not completely crazy,
right? I don't really think that's an effective, like, it's not a satisfying conclusion mm-hmm. at all. I enjoyed going up and looking through his stuff and seeing sort of the logs and, you know, the fact that he kept his son's birthday card and, all these little details.
Can I say for a sec, like, prop detail in this game was phenomenal. There
oh,
are so many
really
things
good.
To find
yeah.
and pick
yeah.
up and look at, like books and trinkets and fossilized pieces of things.
Can I real quick talk about the navigation in this game while we're talking
yeah.
about props and stuff?
Yeah.
So Annie got me like a special edition physical copy of this game. Wow. Shout out to Annie. Thank you, Annie. It came with a map. Like, so in-game, you can pull up a map, and it has a little, like, dot where you are. Mm-hmm. You can turn on that option, and you have a compass, and that's how you get around. Mm-hmm. The way I played is, like, so it came with a map, like, a physical copy of the map in the game. So if I ever needed to get around the park, I pulled out that physical copy and used the compass and, like, did not use any, like, game-assisted wayfinding. Like, if I was lost, I had to, like, consult the map and figure out how to get there.
That's cute.
The most like immersive and satisfying way to like get yeah. around this world. Like it just felt I've never like interfaced in a game in that
way.
We're
it
also
was
very rewarding.
We're also
that sounds,
like
that sounds like Heavy Rain telling you to fold a an origami
to cut
figure.
Your finger off.
Continue what?
That's like Heavy Rain telling you to fold an origami figure during the loading screens.
Oh my
no, that
God.
Actually, that actually, that sounds awesome. I've never heard of a game having that kind of approach before, and I really, I wish that I had done that.
Well,
that was great.
We're also living in an age. I mean, this was an adjustment for me as well, where waypoints and true like end automated navigation is in literally everything that we play. To have a quasi, it's not a sandbox per se, but you can go anywhere in the environment. To it just being, hey, you have a physical map or, you know, a map that you're holding, with no sort of, like, waypoint. It's just sort of you understanding consistent, like, fixtures within sort of the park area. That's all you have to rely on. It's jarring at first. Like, I remember leaving my tower, having to go to that to go find the teen girls. And to their credit, they do a really smart thing of the indication is you have fireworks shooting off in the sky. So that's like some direction of, okay, this is where I'm going to. It sets up the expectation that, like, okay, I have to physically look down at my map, orient myself that way, and sort of find destination through there. And I think the way that they build up that sort of exploration mentality is pretty smart, and it's not too overwhelming. Because at first I was like, I can't do this. Like, I don't know how to do this. This is really tough. But, you know, slowly but surely you get familiar with what's around you, and you can orient yourself pretty well. So
I mean, like, hella credit to the, like, people that, like, created this map. Like, I was actually able to wayfind.
Oh, it's
like,
great.
I was able to, like, refer to everything. Like, if you were to, like, give me Skyrim and say, all right, I need to get from Riften to Whiterun, I'd be like, I guess I'm not playing this game anymore. Like, I mean, it's like, it all just sort of, like...
Yeah, no, it's... It worked pretty well. I found the map, like... And I liked that, like, as you kind of use the map, you would kind of update things, and if you saw something, like, I remember there's like a big tree in one of the corners of the map, and your character will, like, draw it in. That kind of, like...
I forgot about that, yeah.
That kind of... It's little details like that, and it's really, like... That's what I want to point out, is, like, it's the small stuff that I think makes Firewatch work so well.
Right.
Are we in coffee table talk, or is there something, anything else we want to get into? Yeah, that silence says everything. That was 5 seconds of wasted time.
I mean, I think I've hit most of the points.
Yeah. All right. Hey guys, good job. We critted this one real good.
It's when you, like, look back and you're like, oh, this is a bad one.
Yeah. Yep. So this is our hit segment, award winning, Emmy nominated coffee table book talk.
Yeah, because that's what books are for.
You know what I like as a little side tangent here. I like that David starts off by thanking people for coming. Then we talk, and then he pats himself on the back, and then he praises his segment, and now he's going to apologize after the segment.
10 out of 10. Yeah, you got it.
Wow.
That's the format.
Can we make a separate book on the psyche of David? Because I think, like, I'd read this shit.
I'm already writing that one. I'm already halfway through that.
It would either be very long or very short, and it just says, wow.
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 Wow. Wow.
Sorry.
So if we were writing a book called The Art History of Video Games, where would Firewatch be in it? I choose you, Max.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I think Firewatch would definitely fall into it, probably in the walking simulator category, but I think that as much as this is a walking simulator, it is a walking simulator with, this is going to sound really stupid, but I think it's accurate. It is a walking simulator with walking mechanics that are interesting. In that it's on.
What are you even saying?
I am saying that it is a walking simulator where you have the map and compass mechanics to reference, which influences the way that you interact with the world. But it still, at its core, is a walking dynamic game.
I do think
you should have just said that instead of your dumb thing first.
I do think. Wow, David being savage right now.
Wow. Okay.
All we're doing is trying to help out his dumb segment, and this is how he responds. I will say that the walking, physical walking and navigation is kind of clunky. I think it's kind of clunky. Like,
I don't think you can say clunky after playing Everyone's Gone to the Rapture. I'm sorry, you just can't.
Oh,
at least there was a fucking square button in this game.
Well, absolutely, but I think the fluidity of movement in Everyone Has Gone to the Rapture is much better than Firewatch. No, don't even put an X up, because when you're trying to navigate down the steps and you're like, oh dear god, oh, there's a latency between agree to disagree.
Yeah, I didn't have any problems either, Caleb. I
did. And it gets a little
you move framey. The joystick forward and your character moves. It, what more could you
and
want?
It gets a little framey too, which adds to the latency. I will say. It's not a huge issue by any means, but I'm telling you, it's not a perfect walking simulator if we're judging it on that basic mechanic.
Mr. Perfect Walking Simulator. But like it stays like so, that. It's like things like you talking about using the compass and referencing. I'm like, as soon as you said, I didn't know that you had a paper map for that, David. That's
awesome.
That's the coolest thing I've heard in a while, and I'm really
so
bummed out.
I win.
I want to play it that way.
I played it the best. If anything, like, play it with the in-game map and turn off the little node for that represents where you are.
That's what
you can sort of get this.
I did do that actually.
Yeah,
but yeah, I had the physics. Man, I want to break that thing back.
That's
up.
Pretty awesome.
So I think this like where this game would end up in the book. I think it goes in the chapter for greatest walking mechanics of all time.
Why would you say that when I was about to take a drink of something?
I was really hoping to get a spit
you
take out
almost
of you.
Spit took so hard, Caleb. that would have made my day.
No, but I think, like, we talked about everyone's gone to the Rapture and how that came out relatively recently and has, like, seemed like it learned nothing about what makes walking simulators, like, interesting. And I think Firewatch is, like, it is a modern walking simulator. It knows what works. Mm-hmm. It knows what doesn't. The story ain't always great, but it is a very worthy addition to the... a very crowded pantheon of walking sims.
Yeah.
I think it's also... Go ahead.
I love that they found a way to not have world waypoints and, like, things floating in your HUD as a player. Like, it really came down to, like, if I want to know where I'm going, I'm not going to pull up a thing. I'm going to pull up a tangible object while I'm walking that I have to reference as a prop. And I think that they knew that they had good props. They knew that they could make good modeled small objects that your character interacts with and you know, rotate and look at and view at a small scale, and they just kind of made like, hey, let's make the mechanics link to that too.
And it's also like really good that you have context based dialogue with Delilah. You can point at something of note and radio that in. Like you can quote unquote report and have sort of a dialogue with Delilah, and in your mind that kind of puts into perspective, okay, this is of note, we've discussed it, I can catalog it within my mind of a fixture of this park, and I can sort of just move on. And you have a lot of, you know, the supply caches where people are physically drawing on maps, trails that they have gone through, shortcuts even. I mean, there are things that help color this environment, and I think that's sort of the lasting legacy of Firewatch. Is it doesn't feel like a sterile environment at all. It feels like a very familiar thing that you as the player are sort of like coming to terms with and sort of you're appreciating through your own discovery. And I think the way that it sort of like changes to that of paranoia and that is also very fascinating as well. So
and you also just made me actually notice something which I really like in this conversation of walking simulators, thinking about all of the walking simulators where you walk around and you find things and then the dialogue you have is the character either thinking to themselves or talking out loud, and having Delilah as this one person interaction gives you the ability to have your player character as Henry tell the player who is actually interacting with the game how he feels about something without having him talk out loud like a weirdo.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Instead, he's reporting in this very believable way, and that's phenomenal. I mean, it's that whole thing of, like, is this a walking simulator? Yes. Did they look at all the pros and cons of walking simulators through the years? Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
It's not like a Telltale where Lee just walks around basically going, man, I never thought about how much I hate zombies.
Thanks
for listening. So if you want to send us fan art of
us in the woods,
us
on fire,
us on fire.
You remember that time David like tried to think of the most incredibly original idea for, you know, fan art, and his final ask was us on a couch. You remember that?
No, but it sounds about right.
Have you been rewatching our own podcast?
No.
You gotta get...
I just will never forget that.
Yeah. All right, so if you want to send us fan art of us on fire on a couch in the woods, okay, send that to crewpodcast@gmail.com. We also got a Facebook group. I said croup. That's really fun. Facebook.com/thecrew. We have a Twitter. Haha. That's a fun joke that I make every time.
I mean, I say haha. We have Facebook, too. We don't use our social media at all.
Yeah, we don't. I'm going to start just putting up just a Google image banners of the game that we're talking about.
Okay. I mean,
we'll pull
you just
the curtains back a little bit.
Caleb, you're a very talented artist, and this podcast is just an excuse to get your art in front of the world, and you're really not capitalizing on that.
Okay,
so
please don't do this.
I am never going to use a hashtag again.
Well, if Max is so defiant, then why should I put forth the effort when David's the only one who's
editing
really bringing?
We're falling apart here.
All right,
guys. There's something that's going to sound very strange to you. We do have email.
Whoa.
What?
We've got an email.
Wow.
It's from power listener, power platinum level listener, Nathan, who wanted to thank us for covering BattleBlock super well. Is it weird to just read the email verbatim, or should I sum it up? This is uncharted territory. What do we do?
I'm not going to help you. You figure it out.
I think you read it verbatim. That's the whole point of emails.
Okay. To hear your words said by other words?
Yes, exactly. By other words.
See your did you just say see your words heard? Wait, I fucked up.
No.
See your words.
Yeah, you did.
Heard by other words.
All right. It reads, sup people, thank you for discussing the most popular game ever, BattleBlock Theater.
Evil.
Questionable distinction. Shut up. It was a valid critique. Oh my god.
Wow! David reverts to a baby.
It was a valid critique.
What a valid critique we have here.
What I got most out of the recent episode was that you consider me your platinum listener. Smiley face. I am so honored for this distinction.
David needs his bottle for his critique.
I give you literal fan art. Keep on posting. He sent us fan art of two fans.
Nice. That's beautiful.
We'll put it in the Facebook group. Fuck.
Wow.
You made a slight blunder, and I'm glad you recorded your blunder.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I just recorded a mental falling accident. Someone take us home. Someone bring me out of this hell.
You didn't apologize, David.
So, Agent Cooper.
What?
Right?
You haven't apologized yet.
For what? Oh, sorry, guys.
Recording.
Sorry about this.
I was about to pick up another Twin Peaks thing, but you guys didn't.
We had a very good episode today, Caleb. I'd rather just end it. This quit is adjourned.
Why does he sound like an old Jewish grandmother right now?
He's old Jewish grandmother baby working in a fire watch tower. Hey, that's a fire out there.
Fire? Help!
Oh, I don't know.
Help, we're being recorded.
You never call home.
Is it rude to include this? I don't know if it's offensive or not.
I think we're fine.
It's really weird.
Okay.